Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition this Friday, the 14th of January, the morning of the fifth and final Ashes test of the series against England in Hobart. And whilst the Australian lineup is not final and official, it seems Marcus Harris has made way for SCG hero Usman Khawaja. A former test bowler, Stuart Clarke, is with me this morning. Good morning, Stu. Selectors have seemingly assured that Marcus Harris has a test career, that it's not dead, but they've gone with the 235-year-old opening partnership of David Warner and Usman Khawaja, it would appear, for the test, which starts at 3 o'clock today.
Yeah, morning, Ryan. Morning, everybody. It does appear that way. Whilst it'll be confirmed just before the toss when the team sheets are handed across. Interesting one for me. As I said yesterday, I didn't think they would do that. I feel really sorry for Marcus Harris. I think they got it wrong to start with, and maybe either A, this is an admission of getting it wrong, or B, they've just said, well, you know what, Usman got all these runs, we can't leave him out of the team. I don't know. Either way, I think they look like they look a bit silly, personally. I still wouldn't have gone with that. 235-year-olds opening the batting, how long does it last for? I saw there was a bit of an article paper from Ed Cowan or something like that saying he'd move Marnus to the top of the order. Mm. I don't agree with that. I think that would be the worst thing they could possibly do. We've got a good middle order. We've got it. I think it's fairly steady now with Travis Head. You're scoring 100. You know, if they want an opener, well, they had an opener, Marcus Harris, and they chose to go with Usman Khawaja. So that's fine, but Usman's going to have to open the batting if that's what you want to do.
So Usman averages at test level in the 90s as a test opener, but he hasn't batted there in the Australian lineup since 2019. And even at Shield level, he hasn't batted there since 2020. He himself has batted in the middle order. Now we're going to Hobart on what looks to be a very green top. So, okay, let's say Australia, you know, no matter what time they're in, the ball's going to be nipping around, and it's going to be a very different look for Usman Khawaja, isn't it, on that kind of surface when you want your openers to dig in and set a good foundation?
Well, it's not like he hasn't done it, but yeah, you're right. He hasn't been at the top of the order for a period of time. It's going to be different than coming in when the ball's a bit older, spinners are potentially on. He's out there against the brand new pink ball, and we know it does a little bit more, especially under light. So if he's batting at an odd time in the day, well, that's going to be a little bit harder again. But these are all the things the selectors needed to weigh up. And that's why I said Marcus Harris. He is the guy that they chose, even at the start of the year. I get the 200s, but Marcus Harris, he was our highest scorer in Melbourne. That was one test ago.
Yep. Yeah, he got 76 in Melbourne.
Yeah.
It seems as though selectors haven't necessarily put the spear through Marcus Harris. In some of the dialogue that I've read, they've said, look, you know, this is not career over for Marcus Harris. Definitely you're going to be in the system and the squad and play through Australia A. But, you know, even though I know your opinion the last couple of days wasn't the popular one, the points you make are valid, because are we picking to win a fifth test when we've already won the series? I understand that Usman Khawaja is hard to drop, but ultimately we've retained the Ashes. We should be looking towards, I guess, a tour of Pakistan and what a lineup will look up like there, but also the future. And you mentioned we've got 235-year-olds at the top of the order.
And this has been the question. So Australian cricket went down whoever's the best player for the team to age and future and rotation and resting and not getting injured and all that type of stuff. That was the way they went. I never agreed with that system. I always thought whoever's the best person for the next test, the best 12 for the next test should get picked in every test. Now they went away. So what are they saying? The new selection panel, and maybe this is what the case is with George Bailey and Tony Dottomade and Justin Langer, is that we're just going to pick whoever's next best for the next test, whether they're ready or not, whether they're fit or not, or they've got niggles. There's no workload issues anymore. We're just picking the best players. I don't have a problem with that system, but it has to be consistent across the board. Mm. Can't be just on this. So, because what will end up happening is, what happens if Marnus Labuschagne misses out two games in a row and gets two zeros? So he gets 0-0, 7-9. And whoever comes in, say Travis Head's out and someone else is batting six, they get 100. Do you drop Marnus Labuschagne and put that player to three? You don't want to get into that spiral, because then players are playing for their lives every game and there's no comfort or relaxedness within the team. Mm. And that then leads to very selfish behaviour because players don't particularly care about the team. All they're worried about is their spot in the team.
Mm.
And that's a really ugly place to be in as a cricket team. Now, I'm pretty sure the selectors will be well aware of that, as will Justin Langer. But you've got to be a little bit careful at times. And it's a unique set of circumstances that happened with Usman being back in the team. And, man, he's a mate of mine. I'd love to see him playing more test cricket. Don't get me wrong. This is not a. This has got nothing to do with Usman. Just, I feel really sorry for Marcus Harris because they backed him three tests ago and he actually hasn't done that badly.
Mm. Yeah, he hasn't batted badly. I think that certainly is the popular opinion. He just hasn't batted as well as a high performance performing Australian team.
If he fails Usman at the top of the order, I hope he doesn't, touch wood, doesn't. When they go to Pakistan, do you put Marcus Harris back in?
Well, no, you can't. You have to stick then, don't you? Because you can't have egg on your face. And look, you know, there's also a lot of the sentiment around Usman Khawaja returning to his country of birth. And, you know, that I think would be great publicity for this Australian cricket team to see Usman at the top of the order in Pakistan. Maybe that even is part of this decision.
So if there's a couple of Australia, and this is why we've got a little bit, now it's all gone a bit funny, because if Marcus Harris goes back to Shield cricket, to say, or BBL cricket, or whatever cricket he's playing, and 100, 100, 100, Usman, duck, doesn't do so well, and then goes back to BBL, Shield cricket, doesn't get any runs. Now we're in a real quandary, aren't you, here? Mm. Because we've gone away from that model. I don't know. Look, there's a lot of questions to be answered, but I wish Usman, he's a mate of mine. I hope he gets 200.
Interesting topics that we will discuss a little bit later also with Trent Copeland. He'll be joining us just after 7 a.m. this morning, 7 cricket commentator. We'll talk about those issues and much more. Well, there's been no decision made on Novak Djokovic's visa status at the moment. That's according to Prime Minister Scott Morrison at the moment. But he has been included in the Australian Open draw. And as far as the draw is concerned, it looks pretty good for Novak Djokovic. He doesn't face Rafael Nadal or Daniel Medvedev until potentially the final. Looking at his side of the draw, could possibly face Gael Monfils in the fourth round, maybe a semi-final against Alexander Zverev. So all in all, a pretty good draw for Novak Djokovic, if he doesn't get booted out of the country, of course. As far as the Aussies are concerned, a pretty tough draw for Alex de Minaur and also Nick Kyrgios, who, just bear in mind, Nick Kyrgios is racing against time to be there with his COVID positive diagnosis, but he will face in the second round Daniel Medvedev. He does have a 2-0 record against Daniel Medvedev, but you would say since they last played, his form has been pretty good. And de Minaur will take on rising star from Italy, Lorenzo Musetti. Casper Ruud is also in his side of the draw. Stefanos Tsitsipas is on his side of the draw. So tough for the Aussies. Tanasi Kokkinakis, he's got a first-round qualifier. He will likely face Rafael Nadal very early in his rounds, and John Millman will face Feliciano Lopez. So tough draws for the Aussie men. And it's interesting to see a lot of the reporting around Ash Barty, Stu, because they're saying that she's been done no favours in the draw. But, gee, when I look at the draw, yes, okay, she's got Naomi Osaka in the fourth round. But being the world number one, can you have a tough draw? I think no one would want to face Ash Barty.
Yes, I think that's the answer to that. Well, you know, when they look at the draw, players, do I really want to play Ash Barty? You know, it would have been like playing Serena Williams. You know, she's a 20-time Grand Slam winner, so we're probably talking different echelon of greatness. But yeah, Ash Barty's got to play whoever she's got to play. You know, she'd like a few comfortable rounds, I'm sure, at the start against a couple of qualifiers. But, you know, Ash Barty, I don't know. I don't know what players look at. It's funny, you know, because I still think people underestimate Ash Barty on the tennis circuit, you know, because she doesn't have the power game of Serena Williams or Sharapova or you know, some of those sort of players that we're used to seeing win these tournaments. She hasn't got the power of some of the Europeans that we see, so I think she gets underestimated a little bit, and it's that fight we like in her, that, you know, when push comes to shove, she delivers.
Yeah, and she's obviously got a tough job because it's been 44 years since an Australian has won a singles title at the Australian Open. That was Mark Edmondson back in 1976, I think it was. So, you know, she's got a tough job, but if there's anyone that can pull it off, it is Ash Barty. We've got a big, big sports breakfast this morning. We're going to be talking to Luke Price, who is the co-trainer of Jumeirah, who will take its place in the three-year-old Guineas at the Gold Coast tomorrow for the Magic Millions Day. Looking forward to talking to Luke. As I mentioned, Trent Copeland will join us to talk everything about the upcoming test today in Hobart between Australia and also England. Brad Davidson will be hopefully finding us some good winners for the weekend's racing. Plenty of great racing, as we know, up on the Gold Coast for the Magic Millions. Brad Rosen will be talking basketball. The NBL is in full swing with a lot of games back after, a COVID-disrupted start to 2022. Brendan Parnell, Queensland Racing CEO, will join us, and Robbie Slater will talk all things football. And checking those headlines now, the Sydney Morning Herald and respected cricket writer Malcolm Conn has written about Justin Langer. We've been speaking right throughout this week that there's been a lot of talk of Justin Langer not having his contract renewed with Cricket Australia as head of the Australian cricket team. Obviously, it comes on the back of disharmony in the group, which was August last year, where it seemed as though that there was almost a bit of a player revolt about the way Langer approached things. But obviously, since then, he's won a 2020 World Cup and retained the Ashes. So a lot of people are sort of saying, well, what more do you need to do to tick the box? But Malcolm Conn's article is interesting because he's saying that even though that Langer has taken a bit of a back seat since that reported immunity, Andrew McDonald, assistant coach, and also Michael DiVenuto, assistant coach, he's suggesting that they will leave if Justin Langer would stay. He's quoted also Darren Lehman suggesting that Langer should walk away. And another senior cricket source has said that Langer should read the room, quote. So that would suggest that even though the results at the moment are very positive for Justin Langer, perhaps behind the scenes, still in that dressing room, things aren't right. Could that spell the end of Justin Langer and not have his contract renewed?
Well, that's, I suppose, the million-dollar question, that whether Justin stays or not. Look, Justin Langer, and people sometimes, I think, get this. Justin Langer was a great player, and Justin Langer has been a very good coach. Whether he's a great coach or not, that's probably for someone else to decide down the track. But can't believe his playing career get involved in whether he's a good coach. If it isn't working behind closed doors, and only those behind closed doors will know, everyone can speculate and postulate about what the answer is, then Australian cricket will need to make a decision. There's some tough choices there because Ben Oliver, the guy that runs the high performance for Cricket Australia, has been Justin's right-hand man. So he's the decision maker. Nick Hockley's sort of newish to the job. So they'll be taking feedback from the players. Look, at the end of the day, if it's not working behind closed doors, they will get rid of Justin Langer. And whether they're winning or losing, they're still looking to improve and go forward. And that's probably the biggest question is, can Justin Langer take them forward? If the answer is yes, then he'll remain the coach. And if he can't take them forward and they've reached their peak under Justin Langer, whether they're winning or not, maybe they'll change.
Mm. Darren Lehman has suggested that he seems to think that 4 to 5 years is the right amount of time for an Australian coach. As a player, and you can often have a career in an Australian cricket team for, 10 to 15 years, depending, your level of quality, what would be the right time, I guess, as a player? Because you always want to keep evolving as a player, don't you?
Yeah.
And so you want to be evolving under the right sort of tutelage from
the coach. I think Bush pretty spot on the money there. I think the other thing to think about the Australian, you're away so much, they play so much cricket. That's why they're thinking about splitting the roles. Mm. You know, there's names doing one form and then, names doing the other form. So, yeah, I think Lehman's right. I think Buchanan did a long stint, if you think back. And so did Simpson. They did long stints with the Australian cricket team. I think 5 years, you're starting to get towards the end of your, whether you like cricket, passionate about cricket, especially if you've had the same group. And you've got to remember, you've had Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood, Lyon, Smith there for a long period of time now. And you've had Tim Payne there for a period of time too, because he came in after the the
Sandpaper Gate, so, in South Africa.
That's I think Darren's actually, it's probably good comment, a good quote that, that coming from someone that's done it, was involved in that whole issue, might just realise how taxing that can be on your health and also on the team.
What else is making headlines?
Yeah, from the news people, Stefano Tsitsipas, I think I got that right.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good. Says Djokovic saga makes VAC stars look like fools. Not everyone's playing by the same rules. So it appears, and we talked about this earlier in the week, that when he walked into the gym, there was a deathly silence, and everyone just stared at him. But you know, he's made some quotes in here. We look like fools. The majority of players look like fools for following the rules. I'd like to. Where is it here? Not everyone seems to be playing by the same rules. Mm. It seems like others get opportunities. You know, he's spoken in that sort of language, and I've paraphrased a little bit there. So it's clear that the Novak thing has divided the tennis population.
Yep. It's interesting that not only has he lost a lot of the sport-loving fans and tennis fans, but he seemingly is losing a lot of his fellow players in the locker room as well. So we'll see how it plays out, because it is still playing out, the Novak Djokovic saga, and it may well play out until Saturday, Sunday, perhaps even Monday, but surely not Monday, because that's when the Australian Open gets underway. This is the Big Sports Breakfast this Friday, the 14th of January. Stuart Clark and Ryan Phelan with you. Looking forward to speaking to Luke Price just before the top of the hour. Trent Copeland, Seven cricket commentator, will join us after 7. Brad Davidson also in that hour will be hopefully finding us a few racing winners. Brad Rosen talking all things NBL. Brendan Parnell, Racing Queensland CEO, will be talking about the Magic Millions. And Robbie Slater will be talking all things football. There's an English Football League match between Liverpool and Arsenal, which gets underway in about 15 minutes from now, and I'll keep you updated. Updating the scoreboard now, and Hobart, they defeated the Sydney Thunder last night in the BBL by 9 runs at Marvel Stadium. Same ground, and the Melbourne Stars defeated the Melbourne Renegades by 6 wickets. They're the Big Bash scores from overnight. South Africa, now they're 2 for 101. They only require another 111 runs for victory against India at stumps on day 3 of the third test at Newlands. So South Africa are looking pretty good there. Illawarra Hawks defeated the Sydney Kings 97-89 at Wynn Stadium last night. The first of 7 big games coming up the next week in the NBL. Now, yesterday we spoke to Paul Gow, and I'll tell you what, his tips are off to a great start at the Australian PGA. Yesterday he tipped Jed Morgan, who was good odds. I think he might have been around about $21. He's currently in a tie for 2nd there. And he also tipped Michael Sim to win. He's in a tie for 9. So, 9th. So, Jed Morgan is 6 under. The leader, though, is Lewis Dobler at 7 under in the Australian PGA. Aaron Pike also tied for 2nd at 6 under with Jed Morgan. So, the first round underway at the PGA. Now, at the Sony Open in Hawaii, players are out on course there. There's 6 Aussies that will be taking their place. Obviously, Cameron Smith backing up from the Tournament of Champions as well. But most of those guys won't be off until after midday. So only one Aussie out on course at the moment, and that's Cameron Percy. And he's 1 under through 9 holes. Sepp Straka currently leads there at the moment. So very early days at the Sony Open in Hawaii. Wouldn't it be great to see Cam Smith going back-to-back? But we've got Mark Leishman there as well, Matt Jones, who finished 3rd at Maui. Cam Davis is there, Brett Jurut. So hopefully it might be a good start to the year for the Aussies in the Gulf.
And as Gowie said yesterday, that you haven't got some of the big names as you saw in the Tournament of Champions, the Morikawas and co. So for the Australians, there's a chance that they could, if they play well, and we saw Cam Smith winner last week, but Cam Davis is a good golfer.
Yes.
He's a really good golfer. Leishman, we know. And they generally do well over there, the Australians, as Gowie was saying yesterday. So there's a real opportunity for those guys to come out and start their season on the right foot.
And it's often a good start for the Aussies in Hawaii. We saw for many, many years Jeff Ogilvy and Stuart Appleby always performing well. Apparently very similar, not that I've played in Hawaii, but apparently very similar conditions to a lot of courses here in Australia. So good luck to those Aussies. And there's a English Football League match which is just about to get underway between Liverpool and Arsenal this morning. So we'll keep you updated with that score. Send us an SMS and be part of the show, 0419 767 272, or give us a call on the open line number as well, 1353 53. That's where we'll go now. Good morning, John.
Good morning, fellas. How are you going?
Very
good
well.
John. Good. Have you been watching the India and South Africa series?
Been keeping an eye on the scores. You've obviously been watching intently, have you?
Oh, mate, yeah. Look, it's a fascinating series. And it's, South Africa unearthed a good one, that young Marco Jansen, the fast bowler.
Yep. A big tall left armer?
Yeah, left armer. But he's a lefty, Stuart, but he reminds me a lot of Glenn. He's crossed between Glenn McGrath and Bruce Reid. Just his approach to the wicket.
Fairly good bowler, then, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good. And Kagiso Rabada's found his mojo as well. You know, it's a great series. Possibly the ascendancy swung late there because they got Dean Elgar out India late in the day. So that even though they only need just over 100 runs, they've got quite a long tail. I mean, Kagiso Rabada comes in at 7.
You think they've got a long tail? Because I read a bit of the commentary and they were pretty much suggesting that Keegan Peterson needed to dig in there and probably get a good score to just, you know, I guess, secure the result, but you think they've got a bit of batting there?
No, they've got a long tail, mate. Peterson has to bat long into this. I think if they get past him and possibly Markham, then, I think they could be in a lot of trouble. India not out of it, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So what do you think about moving Labuschagne to open? For today, I think one eye on Pakistan. I just think possibly we are maybe better suited if Khawaja is going to play at Pakistan, that he stays in the middle order.
Well, that was also the suggestion of Ed Cowan to move Manus Labuschagne to the top of the order, and we also need to mention that Labuschagne currently is the number one ranked Test batsman. He took that position during this series over Joe Root. But I don't know, John. It's a situation that, it ain't broke, really, is it, you know?
Well, John, if you're going to move your batting, why pick him?
I know what you're saying. Never try and strengthen one position by weakening another. But it is not unusual for number threes to open, good number threes to open to suit the occasion. I
accept all of that. That's exactly right. But you've got an opener, and they're choosing not to pick him for a guy that bats in the middle order and make him open. So why move Manus?
Yeah, I just feel we're in a situation with this test. Yeah, of course it's an Ashes, and every test is an event. But just feel we're in a situation where we can experiment a little bit with, and it's not just Pakistan. I mean, we've got Asian tours coming out of our ears in the next 12 months. It'd be a good time now to say, and it's not as if these fellas have got the opportunity to go back to Shield and experiment there. I just feel we've got an opportunity to see all the cards that we've got on the table there, boys.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you sort of think about bowling lineups as well. I mean, as far as with one eye on the future, there was the suggestion of Mitch Swepson coming in the Sydney test as well. You know, we're at some stage surely going to have to bowl two spinners, you would think, you know, in this tour of Asia. And just how much time is he getting out in the middle? You know, that's something to consider as well.
But, yeah, absolutely.
All very good points, John. Enjoy the cricket today. Looks like you'll be pretty busy watching both South Africa and India and also Australia and England.
And the BBL, don't forget. Chuck some of that in there as well.
Good on you, John. Thanks for your call. Looking forward to plenty of action today in the cricket. Now, imagine owning a horse that is eligible to race for $1 million in the newly announced Magic Millions race, the Syndicate. So for just $200, yes, $200, that's all it is, you can own a share of Laurie Daly's six-horse racing team, with three of the six horses eligible for the big new race on the Gold Coast. So Richard Friedman, he has declared Luna Rocks will be winning races. Blue Torpedo is close to her debut with Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott, while Kim War, she's impressed with her star Turn Gelding. So don't just let Lozza hog the limelight. Join in the fun. Don't miss out. Simply go to trl.net to race for $1 million. Looking forward to the Magic Millions Carnival tomorrow. Obviously, the two-year-old classic. A lot of eyes will be on that with the favourite, Cool and Gatter. But the other feature for the day, $2 million in prize money for the Gold Coast Magic Millions three-year-old guineas. And what a race it is shaping up to be. The Robert and Luke Price train, Jamea, currently tops the betting boards in what seems to be a wide-open race. But we know that Jamea certainly has a lot of class, a two-time Group 2 winning filly, taking out both the Percy Sykes and also the Furious Stakes. She missed a scheduled run at Doomben when she was scratched from the Nudgee Stakes on New Year's Day. That was probably because of a heavy check. We'll find out soon. But how is she tracking ahead of tomorrow? Luke Price joins us. Good morning, Luke.
Morning, fellas.
That was the reason, was it? The heavy track missing that run on New Year's Day?
Yeah, we just didn't want to gut bust the first up. It wasn't the ultimate goal, which is tomorrow. We just thought we'd only been up in Queensland 3 days, and we thought we'd stud run that track. I left it to the last minute, but it was certainly getting no better. It was getting heavier and heavier, so I thought we just left too much on the track. So we elected to trial it 2 days later, 3 days later, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, so how have things been tracking with her? You're happy enough with what sort of work you've been able to get into her in the lead up to this?
Oh, yeah, that trial was, we gave her a nice hit out. We made sure she ran through the line strong that day, which she certainly did, and come through it extremely well. She's done well, had a real strong gallop again here on Tuesday morning on the course proper. I think we've done everything we can without that race fitness under our belt, but I just felt the best scenario was just, keep her on the better side first trip away instead of flattener so early in the prep.
You've locked in Tommy Berry, the reason behind that?
Tommy, he's got a great association with the horse. He won a $1 million race on her back in the autumn. He only had to have one ride on her to know how good she was going. He wasn't getting off.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because Brock Ryan, who also has ridden your filly, will ride a horse that we're going to be watching pretty closely in the race in Ruby Kisses, because Jamie Rogers, our co-host, part owns Ruby Kiss, and she's racing for a big bonus there. So there's a few connections to Jamea that will be quite interesting. What did you make of barrier number 8 for her? We know that she's sort of a horse that probably likes to, I wouldn't say that she goes back, but you don't normally like to use her out of the barrier too much, do you?
Yeah, we don't. But look, from that gate, I think we might even come out at 6, and we follow on the horse of Waller's Starman, who's probably one of the horses to beat, I feel, from the barrier draw. So, look, there's good speed outside. I don't want to see a breakneck speed. I'd like to see him not go too quick. I don't want to, get us out of our comfort zone like they did in the Golden Rose. They were swimming that fast. But look, I just think from that gate, we're going to be 3 lengths closer and less ground to make up. There's going to be a lot of traffic there tomorrow. So, Tommy's very experienced come Magic Millions time. He's going to step up on the big days. And I'm sure he's got the right horse underneath him to do it tomorrow.
For your stable, winning a race of this calibre, what does it mean from a promotional point of view?
It would be fantastic, really. We've had the best 12 months we've ever had on the racetracks with a couple of those bigger races. And we nearly won a Golden Eagle, $7.5 million race. Then we've got two really good headline acts. So they training winners sell themselves. And we come to the sales up here this week, and we've been quite active. And we've bought a bit of quality there. And, we really want to get new people on board, and we want to show them that we can turn up weekly and train these big race winners in the big moments.
Yeah, obviously, Count DeRupi, you mentioned with the Golden Eagle. It's funny, isn't it? You didn't win the race; you ran second. But I guess have a horse like that just really puts you on the map for these blue chip sales and a lot of people wanting to give you horses.
Yeah, well, that's right. They're two very, very good horses. They haven't got the Group 1 tag against their name yet, but I've got no doubt they're up to Group 1 company. You know, her first Group 1 mission will be to surround this filly, this preparation in, you know, 6 weeks' time after today, after tomorrow, I should say. And with the other horse, you know, he's come back and he's only had a couple of weeks' work. We haven't finalised his plans, but, he'll probably kick off in a Group 1 first up a race like the Canterbury Stakes. So it's very exciting for the stable. You know, we've got around the 40 in work. We haven't got huge numbers, but we've got the right amount of numbers. We're just getting some real good quality in the stable these days. It certainly makes it really easy to work with the horses.
Gee, I tell you what, just on Counter Rupee, good race to run second in, wasn't it? What was it? 1.5 for second?
Yeah, I think it's more money to run second in the Golden Eagle than it is the Melbourne Cup. So it's pretty special.
Hey, how's the Magic Million sales been? You've been there right in the middle and cut and thrust of it all. As good as previous years?
Yeah, I think it's as good as previous years. It's very, you know, there's a couple of million, a fair few million dollar lots yesterday. There's plenty of money still around. There's great hype up here. You know, there's plenty of people around. Everyone's taking on the COVID and beating it. So it's good to see life, you know, moving on as normal, and the sales are just as hot as ever. You know, you've got to be strong in the market and you've got to be there and you just got to be at the right time, because we've had to go up plenty of horses and we just haven't been able to get too many of the ones that we want, but we've ended up with a couple of real nice ones. And we bought a So You Think colt yesterday that, you know, just looks just like his old man, and hopefully he's every bit as good.
Talk me through the process. You know, you obviously do your homework, sit around, and then, you know, get around, have a look, talk to people, you know, on the day. It must be a tad nerve-wracking sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you can go through and do as much homework as you want, and then all of a sudden you're blown out of the water in 2 seconds, so with the price tags. But look, I've been sort of looking at horses for a good week before the sale started. I'm very lucky. I've got my cousin up here, works for Magic Millions, Dan Robinson, and he goes through most of them, and then we put a short list together. We've more put the right price list together as well. You know, there's horses that are going to be well and truly over your budget. We're not the sort of blokes that go and spend $1 million on a horse, $500,000 on a horse. So, you know, you don't have to spend big money to get the right horses, as you can see with Jamea and Counter Rupee. We spent $145 and I think $130 on her. So they've done more than their money's worth for us. So, you know, you're the right spot, the right time, and do your work, you'll get the right horse.
Have you got anything else coming through, you know, in the stable that could be a nice horse to keep an eye on? I know our Bellagio Miss is quite handy. Is there anything else coming through that you think might make a step up to City Grade?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. There's a horse, our Bellagio Miss's brother, we've got in the stable, All Machiavellian. He's won 3 from 6. He's a really exciting horse that come from the Greg Hickman stable. I've got a lot of time for him. He could easily step up to be a Golden Eagle horse at the end of the year as well. He's probably going to be a lot better 4-year-old. He's still a big, immature bugger. Now, I'm starting a 2-year-old over next weekend, and another headwater filly. Her trials have been really good, and we're hoping she puts a hand up for a millennium spot. But she, you know, she's got to perform next weekend first, and if she does do that, she'll find herself in that $2 million race for the Millennium English race in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, well, good to hear that there's some great cattle in the stable, and obviously it will be a great launching pad in the 3-year-old guineas tomorrow. Just on the race, obviously she is favourite. Who do you identify as the horses to beat in that race tomorrow?
I think the barrier draw's made it hard for a lot of them now. I think the horse of John O'Shea's I Am Lethal had a lot of respect for its win the other day. Sort of, it fills you a bit more with confidence when Tommy Berry's been riding the horse and he's not getting off your horse to ride it.
Mm.
And then I thought the horse of Chris Wallace was really good here last weekend.
Starman, yeah.
Yeah, it's had the run. It's drawn a good barrier. It's got James McDonald. So I think it would be one of the ones to beat. It's a big, a lot of luck in running in a big field of 18. You know, they've got to travel up here. They've got to settle in. And I think we've done everything possible to perform at our best with our filly, and it's going to take a pretty good horse to beat her.
Yeah, it's a soft 6 at the moment, but you're expecting a good track, and that'll suit, obviously, Jamea.
Yeah, I think it'd only be, you know, in the soft range up the straight, personally. I galloped on that track Tuesday in the back straight, and it was all pretty much in the good range, just a little bit softer up the straight. And with the weather we've been having and no rain predicted, I'd be surprised if it's not in the good range.
Hey, Luke, you know there's a bit of pressure on tomorrow because we do a multi here at the Big Sports Breakfast. Normally Laurie Daly does it, but he's actually away at the moment. So Uncle Laurie, who's actually Yvonne Sampson's uncle, he's a pretty good judge, right? And so his Big Sports Breakfast multi this week includes Jamea. He's got Jamea, which is Gold Coast Race 8, number 2. Jamea to finish the top 2 into Rose Hill Race 1, number 3, Sentimental to finish in the top 4. And if you go to today's offers on the TAB website, you can get $10 about that double. So we're pretty confident about Jemai finishing top two tomorrow?
Mate, I think she'll give you a good run for your money. She's a quality act, class horse of the field, and I can't wait for tomorrow.
Oh, I love that confidence. And you're a young man going places with your dad, Robert. A great stable at the moment, not just with Jemai, but Count Darupi and many, many others. So best of luck tomorrow. Hopefully another big feature race coming your way with Race 8, number 2, Jemai. Best of luck.
Thanks, gentlemen. Cheers.